Hello and welcome to the Champions for Social Good podcast, the podcast for people dedicated to social impact. I'm Jamie Serino, Director of Marketing with the MicroEdge Division of Blackbaud. I'm here today with John Gersma, Chairman and CEO of BAV Consulting and an internationally recognized theorist on consumerism and its impact on growth, innovation, and strategy. As a consultant to corporate leaders, John is a pioneer in the use of data to identify social change and help companies anticipate and adapt to new customer interests and demands. John is also a TED Talk speaker and author of several best-selling books, including his most recent, The Athena Doctrine, which explores the rise of feminine values on leadership, policy, and innovation. Welcome, John.
Hey, Jamie, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Why don't you start off just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, my focus is really on understanding how leaders are managing with values in today's society. And this is a big trend I guess maybe we could kind of get into in a few minutes. But specifically, my background is looking at data, leadership, and trying to pull those together to understand how society is changing and how that might impact how businesses and leaders need to react.
So with that work, can you tell us about some of the trends that you've seen recently?
Sure. I mean, one of the really big trends that we're seeing right now is this phenomenon that we call soft power. And this came out of some work that we did earlier this year, where we presented at the World Economic Forum. And we gathered research with 16,000 people from around the world, elites, business people, and even consumers. And we actually asked them to rank countries on the basis of their perceptions. And you might be familiar with like best colleges from U.S. News and World Report.
Right.
So they asked us best countries, like let's do a study. And so it was really interesting for us because we worked with Wharton to develop a model. And what was so interesting was that the traditional definitions of power, sort of the banks and tanks, you know, which is the scale of a country, the size of its assets, sort of how powerful it was less important to people around the world than whether or not they were seen as innovative, whether they're focused on culture and values for their people, meaning, you know, providing a safe and decent society. And then really interesting for us is whether or not they were strong global citizens. So Canada was right at the top, along with Germany, in terms of some of the countries that were the highest on this sort of what we called a soft power metric.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that Canada does or Germany does that you think made those citizens sort of vote that way or provide that information?
Yeah, definitely. We're going back into the field, Jamie, in another week's time for the 2017 report. But at the time when we gathered the data late last fall, Germany rose to the top on the basis of people believing that Chancellor Merkel was actively involved in leadership. I mean, she was wrestling with a lot of issues, right? Greece and the European Union, immigration. And at the same time, you had the Trudeau effect of Justin Trudeau sort of taking office and welcoming in refugees at the airport rather than building walls. And so what was interesting for us is we just started to see that these sort of more softer, more feminine aspects of nations were something that people seemed to kind of glom onto and value.
That's I think that's very interesting. And so how would you position that against something like Brexit or something like, you know, the rising notion of people wanting maybe more protectionism or isolationism?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about today's times is looking short-term and versus long-term. And I think we'll probably look back in hindsight with Brexit and some of these other aspects is more short-term nationalist, perhaps even xenophobic reactions to very real concerns that people have. I mean, there's no question that people around the world are, in many countries, even developed nations, are feel disaffected and feel detached from their leadership. So I guess for us, what we thought was so interesting in this soft power movement was people underneath the angst and the anxiety and the frustration and the aggression and the knee-jerk reactions were actually pulling back and trying to say, you know what, we actually really value these leaders because they are taking a more longer-term view of how they think about change. And that was definitely something we saw, too, in our book, The Athena Doctrine.
Right. Well, that's a good segue. Can you tell me a little bit more about that book?
Yeah, sure. So what we did is we Michael D'Antonio is my my co-author, and he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer, really interesting researcher and writer. And he and I got together and we started writing a book that we thought was going to be called What People Want. Mm-hmm. And we began writing this book right after, kind of somewhere around the 2 or 3 years after the global financial crisis and sort of beginnings of a lot of this angst and anxiety that we've mm-hmm. seen sort of spill over to today. And what we started to see and what people said they wanted out of leaders and out of businesses and corporations were things like empathy and trust and collaboration. And mm-hmm. a lot of these words kind of kept coming up and over and over again. And it kind of occurred to us that they felt sort of feminine, these words. Mm. So these were two kind of middle-aged guys looking at these words, trying to understand what they meant. And myself being a researcher, we got together and started thinking if there was a sort of a diagnostic test that we could do. So we gathered a massive data set. We interviewed 64,000 people. Wow. Across 18 countries, and we did a really simple exercise. We split the sample in half, and we asked half the sample to gender 250 human traits, mm-hmm. and the other half of the sample we asked what are the most important traits and qualities for modern leaders. But in that group, there was no discussion of gender, and okay. so it was modeling. And for us, it was fascinating to see that the most important things that were highly correlated with modern 21st century leadership with things that also people, both men and women, thought were more feminine.
Hmm. And the people that you polled, were they all from around the world?
They were. It was a nationally representative sample of countries that we specifically picked for diversity in terms of economic development, culture, religion. So, you know, we've got data in this sample from Indonesia, from France, from Germany, from China, from Mexico, the U.S., really broad base of countries. And what was so interesting to us is the things that they thought that were most important and urgent were these traits like empathy, mm-hmm. Collaboration, flexibility, selflessness. And for us, it was really interesting. The most least correlated to ideal modern leaders were aggression, pride, ego, and control. Mm. So,
well, that's encouraging.
Yeah, especially when we wake up this morning, right?
Yeah. So for the listener, we're recording this the day after Election Day, so the giant elephant in the room, I guess, as we talk about something like this, is what are your general thoughts on the election? As I'll try to make it a little more narrow there, yeah. as it relates to your research and your book, The Athena Doctrine, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, I think what we saw in our data over several years has definitely contributed to the results that we saw last night, which is, you know, regardless of your political ideology, people do feel sort of detached. They're questioning leadership. And right. we see that, Jamie, in our data. Mm-hmm. Trust in institutions and in brands and companies has declined by 50% since the global financial crisis. So, you know, a lot of the messaging that President-elect Trump offers was very much resonating with a lot of people, mm-hmm. In our country and perhaps even around the world. So I think what's really important, though, to think about is that oftentimes we've seen this in our research with leadership, and others have as well, is that the skills and qualities that you need to get to the top are not necessarily the same ones right. you need to stay at the top.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And I think that's where it's going to get very interesting to look at whether or not some of these more essential, what we would describe as modern Athena mm-hmm. skills, are going to be part of the arsenal in healing the nation and getting past this really divisive election.
Yeah, that's a good point. And even some people alluded to that sort of notion in Trump's initial speech, even like minutes after winning. So I want to return to something you said about filling a gap. And I had been reading and hearing about people saying that corporations are being looked to there as well as being an entity that could fill a gap where perhaps governments are not doing that for citizens. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, maybe I'll go back to our research for the Athena Doctrine and start in Bhutan. So we went to the tiny, Himalayan kingdom of Bhutan, and we met with the Gross National Happiness Commissioner.
Okay.
And what was phenomenal to us, other than I think having to take 3 to 4 connecting flights to get to yeah. get there,
which reduced your happiness level.
The happiness definitely dropped, no doubt. But we weren't probably the first to get there, but we were so amazed by how the country is thinking about GDP,
right.
which is basically they've opened the aperture on it, and they've mm-hmm. said GDP is not just cash and not just economic development. It's really about how do you measure decisions against broader quality of life metrics, mm-hmm. education, the environment, et cetera. And I think it's so fascinating because I do think to your point about filling a gap, they are getting such a platform, and they've been written about mm-hmm. because I think people instinctively feel something's missing.
Right.
And I think that's bringing it back to business gets really interesting because in our data, you know, we see some pretty interesting things about, for example, you know, millennials, which are now the largest part of the workforce. In our data, 72% of millennials would work for less money at a company whose culture and values they admire.
Right.
At the same time, our data and data from Edelman and others show that upwards of nearly 80% of people want CEOs to be more involved discussing social policy
right.
decisions. They want them to get involved because they don't think governments can solve right. the problems alone.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting, right? Because you've got business driving 72% of consumers and driving 72% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of saying, all right, you guys are like the engine of the world anyway. Mm-hmm. Why don't you get more involved in helping us fix the world?
Yeah.
And don't you think?
Yeah. And well, we're hearing that message from the UN as well, because mm-hmm. we've participated in some Impact 2030 discussions, in some discussions around the Sustainable Development Goals. Mm-hmm. And time and time again, they keep saying we need to reach out to the private sector to help get this done. So I think even a body like the UN is realizing the role mm-hmm. that corporations need to play and the private sector needs to play. So you do actually talk about the coexistence of purpose and profit there. So can you expand on that and talk a little bit about that to how a corporation or a company can embrace that?
Yeah. I mean, we just finished some research that we are really intrigued with, but it looks at the rankings of companies and brands on their cultural currency, sort of, I guess it's a proxy for how strong your brand is. Mm-hmm. If you've got innovative products and services and a really powerful brand, and the other one being social responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And the brands that scored right at the top, or companies of being strong on both, in our data had far stronger affinity and loyalty
right.
and pricing power. And they were brands that were brands like Warby Parker,
mm-hmm.
Tom's, Patagonia,
right.
CVS, you know, Apple. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting when you pull back from those, Starbucks was at the top,
mm-hmm.
is you started to see companies that were heroic in two ways, right? Being strong on being heroic for their customers and their brands by creating, you know, great products and cool brands, and then also really taking a social stance.
Right.
And so we actually just shared some of that data with Tom's. We were out there last week, and I think they really get it, but they're structured differently, Jamie.
Yeah.
You know, they're structured like a modern 21st century millennial
right.
type company.
Right.
And I think today's companies, they silo those two
right.
disciplines.
Right.
And that's not the case. I mean, today, really anything, we call it organic authority,
mm-hmm.
but anything can become a great tool that accomplishes both goals because
right.
people want both.
Right. In fact, I was speaking with someone at Warby Parker, and she was, you know, one of the first 50 people in the company. And I asked her about how did you scale something like that, you know, and there are difficulties of scaling that sort of model, but they did it. And so, and you're bringing up the notion of a company starting like that, then what about companies that did not start like that?
Yeah.
Do you have advice for those companies to break those silos and start to move in that direction?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one of the interesting things is looking at, we call them kind of restarts, but you know, big companies that have that sort of startup mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they do is that they will kind of deploy tactics as strategies, which is they will sit down and look at ways in which they can actively promote social good and build that into their brands through a tactic or an idea. So, you know, clearly these can be business decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, CVS deciding not to sell cigarettes you know, was a business decision that blew up the internet, right? It was a bigger idea than anything they could have done in advertising, just to be cynical about it.
Right, right.
But in the old 20th century view, that was like, well, we don't want to talk about that stuff because it looks like we're, you know, trying to be promoting and advertising.
Right.
And I'm saying in our data, millennials are saying, you better tell us what that stuff is or we're not going to buy your products.
Right, right.
So that's the whole idea is, how do you think about your CEO? How do you show your values, right? How do you show your values to society in a way that, that shines a light on your products?
Right. And so you work with your clients then to, I guess, take a look at their data and take a look at their audiences and try to make that shift?
Exactly. You know, it's looking at how do you involve your employees as media. I mean, to be honest, I mean, what's interesting today, I think, is HR is going to kind of be completely inverted, you know.
Right.
Human resources used to be about sort of representing management to the people.
Right, right.
And now it's bottom up.
Right.
And it's going to be, I think, a core strategic function moving forward, because HR is going to find the ideas and the people and take the values and culture of a company and shine it from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know how like nutrition leads to complexion. It's that kind of idea, which is why, you know, some of the companies we've been interviewing recently, from like Squarespace to, you know, to Facebook to others, they don't have HR as much as now they have sort of either chief cultural officers or they call them people officers, because they're looking to find ways to show those values in a way that's going to make a difference.
Right, right. And so do you ever work with your clients in relation to the Sustainable Development Goals or the SDGs to educate them on that and move them in that direction?
We do. In fact, we're honored as part of a holding company, WPP, to be working on the gender equality initiative. So I'm involved with the United Nations campaign fund called the Girl Up Campaign, girlup.org, which is amazing, and all proceeds of our book go to Girl Up. But it's just an amazing organization that's focused on taking tween sort of teenage girls and helping them advocate for at-risk girls around the world.
Okay. And do you have any examples of work you've done with your clients that relate to the SDGs?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing work right now with Unilever and Pons to sort of look at the way to build out a sustainable platform. You're probably familiar with them. Unilever calls them USLPs, Unilever Sustainable Living Platforms.
Okay.
But basically, it's a corollary social brand positioning.
Gotcha.
That works for every marketplace brand positioning. I think it's just a brilliant notion that Paul Polman and his team have developed. And so with that, and that's the exciting part about this, where I think everything is going, is that every brand ultimately, I believe, like Tom's, Warby Parker, Unilever brands, are going to be into this space. They're not just going to be out marketing, advertising. They're going to be developing social good programs.
Right. Yeah, well, I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, and it goes back to talking about filling that gap there. So rewinding a little bit back to your research and talking about women leaders, and when you did your surveys, was it in the context of women leaders in government, or was it just leaders in general?
It was leaders in general.
Okay.
And again, what we tried to do with that one half of the sample was not ascribe any gender to the issues, so that we could really understand it in a clean way, how people were thinking about which characteristics, skills, competencies had the biggest impact, or which were the things that people were most in demand.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you finding today in terms of women sort of breaking through glass ceilings of corporations and getting more and more leadership roles?
Yeah, well, I think is clearly, you know, was witnessed last night, but also in boardrooms across America, it's just way behind the times,
right?
And not only at the government level in America, but inside corporations, whether it's women in senior management, women on boards, the numbers is, you know, publicly available are in the teens. You know, they're 15 to 16%, which is for me completely out of whack with the reality that, if you look at most other consumer data, women purchase or influence over 80% of all products and services. And so yet they're not in the center of the leadership making the determination of those products and services, which is a tilt that I can't understand.
Right. Yeah, there are some kind of humorous examples there of, you know, men trying to market, you know, products that women buy and
the lady whatnot. The lady Bic pen was my favorite. Because ladies do write differently. Right. So we need to have a lady pen that's right. Just for them.
Right. I was in a hardware store once and there was a lady hammer. I found that interesting. It was slightly smaller than the regular hammer. It's like okay. So there's that. So what would you say about like the way things are moving, trying to sort of get these two streams to kind of go together, your work with getting companies to be more socially responsible, the movement towards that, mm-hmm. the movement to have women have more leadership roles. Where do you see all that converging and going to?
Yeah, I mean, frame it all, Jamie, is bottom line performance. Mm-hmm. And that's where our data is really aligning, which is that feminine values, in our view, are an operating system for a 21st century competitive advantage.
Right.
And that becomes the fact that we live in this open, social, transparent world. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when you say words, and it wasn't us that said these were feminine, these were people around the world.
Right.
But when you say feminine words, they're obviously interpreted as nurturing and caring and weak. Mm-hmm. But then if you flip that around to real business problems and said, how do we get a number of different organizations to communicate in real time to crash on a project? Well, that's called collaboration, mm-hmm. right? How do we get to insights into customers? Well, that's called empathy. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of reframing a lot of these words and more importantly, probably looking at how it contributes to bottom line performance. Because we're seeing in our data, whether it's on social responsibility or on gender equality, that the companies that are inherently more responsible, more feminine, are doing better in the marketplace.
Right. So going back to what you were talking about with there being maybe, I guess, hopefully a short-term kind of feeling out there of maybe isolationism or whatever fueled Brexit or was fueling, you know, the Trump win, you see a longer-term kind of trend here that isn't that.
Definitely. I mean, I think you've got a number of effects happening, right? You've got the rise of technology, you've got the rise of millennials now into power. You've mm-hmm. got Gen Z right behind them. Mm-hmm. We're going to have the first Gen Z kids in businesses as interns next summer, mm-hmm. summer of 2017. So digital natives, all that stuff that we know about, different values. And then I think, you know, as we think ahead to kind of the future, the other parts of the disruption are the chaos that is just basically in an organization of an economy that's sort of restructuring and changing, right? From making stuff to services, at least, you know, in the U.S.
Right.
But all that stuff, you know, whether it's WeWork or WeLive or, mm-hmm. you know, Rome is my new favorite, where you sign a lease and you can live anywhere in the world.
Wow.
You know, so all this innovation that's happening, the Airbnb of our world, are all going to have impacts on how we relate to each other and how we work and how we think and how we lead.
Yeah. Those are all good points. And could you expand a little bit more on the role you see technology playing?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously scaling ideas to be able to work so fast so that you can, you know, have huge valuations in a company and no assets.
Right.
You know, Airbnb, Uber. But there's just lots of really interesting, I think, solutions that are going to come out of that. I mean, some of the people that we interviewed for the Athena Doctrine, there was this young guy, Fukuzaki-san, who started it. He described it as hacking an Airbnb, but he did it in his dorm room with a couple of his friends right after the tsunami. Mm-hmm. And he put 14,000 families into housing through roomdonor.jp, and he worked faster than the government.
Wow.
And so I think that's part of this key value, Jamie, is like, you know, the 20th century model was obviously top-down, hierarchical, scale, size, power. And this kid in his dorm room is like, well, I see a problem, I'm going to go fix it.
Right. And that definitely is, you sort of always hate to put things into the millennial mind frame, but it definitely, I think that comes from the millennial generation. And even though, you know, Gen Xers and others, I think, now embrace that, I think it came out of that generation.
Yeah, I think it's a set of attitudes and values, It's rather than an age. But it's all because, back to your question about technology, it's all because it's possible now.
Right. All right. Is there anything else you'd want to add or let us know about? I feel like we explored quite a few topics.
No. It's great to talk to you. I love you guys' podcast. You guys do some great work.
Thank you.
It's an honor to be on it.
Well, likewise. Honor to have you. You guys are doing great work. So, John, thanks for joining us. Fascinating conversation. For our listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. To learn more about John Gersma, you can visit bavconsulting.com and follow John on Twitter at John Gersma. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode. And you can keep up with the conversation between episodes by following us on Twitter at Jamie Serino, at MicroEdge LLC, and at BlackBod. Thank you for listening.